What is up, family? On this episode, we're going to be talking about what we're taking into the new year that we learned from 2020. I know 2020 was a crazy year for a lot of people. And we did an episode based on the fact of what we wanted to let go of in 2020. So this episode is now what we're looking forward to in 2021 and what we're taking from 2020. All the things we learned, the good, the bad, the ugly, and what we're going to apply to this beautiful new year, 2021. Hey, I'm praying for all of you, hoping that this year is something amazing. And we hope that you enjoy this episode. We love you guys so much. Here's Knights at the Roundtable. Hey, and welcome to another episode of Knights at the Roundtable. It's your boy, Man Wheezy. I got my queen to the left.
Hello.
Be Real to the right. And we are back at it again, drinking a fave wine of ours, Barcan. It's quickly become a fave of ours.
It's very expensive.
Because of a story that's attached to it that you have to, you know.
The watch story, the last episode.
The story is more expensive than the actual bottle.
Yeah. The story is.
It really is.
Check out the episode questions, because we'll tell you the story there. But it is good. It is a good wine.
Cheers.
And one in which, where the hell is my wine? One in which the queen got a little tipsy. If you're not, we're laughing.
I'm tipsy. Did you see you try to reach for your glass right now?
If you're not watching on YouTube, you don't understand what happened. yes.
Oh, that's funny. He was like,
I couldn't see it.
But my favorite is that he actually grabbed for it with his fingers. He actually did like the claw from that game at the arcade where you try to get a
nobody
a
knows
stuffed
what you're talking
animal.
About. Be quiet.
Everyone knows. You try to get a stuffed. Don't tell me. Be quiet. You try to get a stuffed animal, and the claw never grabs the animal.
It can't grip hard enough.
You nobody know.
Knows. Nobody knows.
That's what Manny just did with his glass.
Nobody knows what you're talking about. Babe, stop. We have introduced something new to this podcast, this one is new. The reading of a part of a book that is spoken to you. Me and B like to listen to audiobooks. So we thought it would be dope, because you guys are always asking us what we're reading and what we're currently studying. We thought,
where's our theme song?
It'd be dope to have a segment. And we came up with a theme song that I wrote. It's actually more of a jingle. Ready? What you reading? What you reading?
Tell me.
Ooh, now I'm torn. I don't know if I like the whisper from last episode or the deep the deep guy voice.
Every
the
time.
Deep, the deep demanding.
Yeah.
Give me the information.
It could be something. It could be different every time, whatever he's feeling.
We got to record this.
Today, yeah. We are going over the book. What? Tell him, Queen.
So I am, one of the books that I'm reading right now is called Drop the Stones.
Drop it.
By Carlos Rodriguez.
Drop.
Forward by Jonathan Martin, good friend of ours. Love both of these men. They are just, they give me hope, honestly. Mm. They give me hope that I can, that I'm on the right track of my life. And I can love God, love Jesus, and disagree with how I was raised. Mm. So this book is pretty powerful, and I've highlighted a few things. So I'm just going to share a couple of things right now. This one says, it's a quote that Carlos quoted. It says, every time we use religion to draw a line that keeps people out, Jesus is with the people on the other side of that line.
Yeah.
And this quote is attributed to Reverend Hugh L. Hallowell. And I really like that.
Yeah.
Because I feel like that's what our religion has done a lot of the times, is tell you who's in and who's out.
Mm-hmm.
Who's worthy, who's not. Who's who's on our team, you know?
Okay, but does that extend then to... Does that extend to people that we disagree with? And here's why I say, over the past, obviously, you'll be hearing this, and the stuff that happened in the Capitol building already happened. But there was a picture. I had three people send me a message on Instagram. And they were like, did you know that this profile is using your pictures? And it's a hat store that I go to that I've been going to in Nashville for like the last 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
Love the owner, has always been sweetheart to me, super kind, super nice, whatever. this past year, last time I went in there, she was obviously a little bit upset at the fact that, you know, her business was closing, or there were the shutdowns, and there was a lot of stuff. So she became highly charged, and all based on the fact that she was just upset, sad, all these things, right? Right. So her feed is now turned into this, the half Trump, half crazy. So I had three people hit me up expecting me, and they said, I don't know if you know, but, you know, we think that you should untag her and unfollow, you know, whatever. Tell them to take down your picture. All this stuff. Just basically cancel them. And I responded to them with, I'm sorry, I can't do that because I don't put politics over people. And they couldn't understand my answer. And I'm like, I'm not that I agree with what their person is saying, but in order for me to maintain what I believe God wants me to do, I can't sever the tie between me and this person, because if and when their ideology falls apart, I would like to be the person there to let them know, hey, God still loves you. He's still there for you. Even though you may have had this momentary, you know, ideology shift. And a couple of them understood, and some of them were like, fine, if you just want to support hatred and, you know, blah, 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 blah. So the reason I bring that up is because one of them was a believer, and they were just like, refused. I kept telling her, I was like, I don't think Jesus would do that to her. I just don't think Jesus would cancel people, because then that would go against his idea that he came for everyone. He came for everyone, the worst of sinners. And what you seem to be telling me is this person's political sin is worse than your sin. So I should now disassociate myself with this person. But I just don't know if God would do that. So I don't feel comfortable doing that. So in that sense, what I'm saying is, what you read, do you think that extends to people that we disagree with, even in a political sense? Because obviously politics is so highly charged right now that it's like, it is literally fighting words.
Every time we use religion to draw a line that keeps people out, Jesus is with the people on the other side of that line. So I think that applies to any time that you tell someone God doesn't like you, or God isn't for you, God's on the other side. So it's almost like, whether you're on this side of the line or this side of the line, if you drew it, he gonna be on that side. If you're saying that God is separate from this person, he's on the opposite side of you.
So then it does
God
extend.
Is not on the left or the right. God is love for
sure.
All people. So
it extends to those people who disagree with us.
Yeah, but that's what I feel like this is saying.
Yeah, yeah, no, I agree.
Don't have the audacity to tell someone that they are on the opposite side of God.
I agree. I just brought it up because, you know, obviously it happened to me this week, and then just to bring it to the table of like, how many times do we, frivolously do that? We easily fall into who culture is canceling, who your friend circle is canceling, who your family is canceling. And it's so easy because there's a lot of reasons to be okay with certain people. Like in a previous episode, we talked about canceling R. Kelly. R. Kelly was canceled a while ago, and granted, he did a lot of ish.
Yeah, mm-hmm. He did. And probably I think he doesn't deserve to be looked at in the same light that he was. But again,
agreed.
It's never beyond the point of redemption. It's never beyond the point of reconciliation. And I think that's like, to me, that's one of those markers of like, it's okay to speak like the truth with love, and
right.
to like, especially when it comes to like biblical truths of like, if there are people who are on the opposite side of that, of like, God's okay with you hating black people, you know, something like that, something as like, that's like very black and white mm-hmm. to me. But mm-hmm. Unfortunately, most other things that we're kind of talking about is a lot more gray.
Yeah.
So it's a lot harder to really draw a line there. But when it comes to like,
should we ever cancel anyone? I guess that's my question.
I mean,
should we as believers ever be on the side of canceling a person?
I mean, we as believers are so good at canceling people.
Yeah.
We are very good at it. But I'm saying, is there ever a point?
It's one of our strongest skills.
Is there ever a point where it would be justified? And do you think God or Christ would ever cancel anyone?
You know, it's okay. So this is, and again, maybe I'm just resorting to nuancing this conversation about what it means to cancel somebody mm-hmm. because it's like, I'm trying to protect my own, how I see this.
Mm-hmm.
So I will admit that. But I feel like it depends what that actually means, because for some people, canceling someone means I won't ever listen to anything that you ever have to say again.
Mm-hmm.
That you, there is no chance or opportunity for you to redeem yourself and to climb back out of this hole that I've dug for you to be in.
Right.
For some people, like that's, I think that's the extreme of like what canceling someone means. But I think there is a healthy form of like, I would kind of almost use the word muting somebody.
Mm.
Like just for a little bit. Like, you know how you could temporarily block somebody on Twitter and Instagram and stuff? And I've done that before.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, that's a form of cancellation for the time being.
Mm.
Like I realize like, hey, this is not a good interaction between us two right now, that you absolutely don't really have anything to add to this conversation. I realize that maybe both of us, but right now what it feels like, you're not so much more open to kind of learning from where I'm coming from here. So let's just stop this conversation because there's no point in moving forward. We'll circle back at another time.
Yeah, but that's definitely not canceling.
I would call that boundaries.
That's not canceling. Yeah, canceling, what we're saying is these people expected me to disassociate and no longer even be involved with another thing, right? Based on their political, religious view or whatever, right? So that is what actual canceling would be. You know, having a healthy boundary and being like, oh, this person only wants negativity for me. That's different. So my thing is, there is an expectation that if someone is out of pocket on what you believe or what you see politically to be true or right, that if you associate with them, you take on all their beliefs. And that's what this person was saying. That because you are letting people know where you bought your hat, you are now supporting them.
Hmm.
And I was telling her, I'm just letting people know where I bought my hat.
Yeah.
That's it. Like, I bought my hat over here, you know? So that's why I'm curious as to how many people, because this person was a believer and she felt okay. And she thought I was in the wrong. Even when I told her, I don't think there's ever a point where God will cancel someone. Because then what he's saying is you are beyond redemption.
I don't think God would cancel somebody, but I would because I'm a human. So I'd be canceling people.
But is that a good enough?
This is, okay, let me read the definition. So one is the definition of cancel. Two is the definition of like what getting canceled means. So cancel in general is just to decide or announce that a planned event will not take place, right? You cancel something. Or is to neutralize or negate the force or effect of another.
Mm-hmm.
So you're now neutralizing or negating the force, the effect of that person, which is interesting because to me that doesn't sound extremely harsh. That sounds somewhat kind of like healthy. Mm-hmm. In some ways, to me, that I associate that more with setting boundaries.
Yeah.
But to cancel someone means to stop giving support to that person. The act of canceling could entail boycotting an actor's movies or no longer reading or promoting a writer's work. It means stop giving support to that person.
See, so that's different, because all that is what that is saying is there is a personal choice.
Yeah.
For you to no longer support that person.
Right.
Because you believe that person has done something that you don't like. Then there's, because I feel this way, now I am expecting you to do the same.
Got it.
And if you're not doing it, that means you support them.
Yeah.
So people are getting canceled not because of any other reason, but you don't agree with me. So I'm canceling you, and now you automatically, and this is what I told him. I was like, why are you projecting on me?
Yeah.
You're telling me that I'm supporting this person, and all I did was tag this person 8 years ago, and they put me on their page. And now you're telling me that they're racist and all this stuff, and I'm supporting them.
Yeah. So,
and I had to tell the person straight up, look, I've had many conversations with this girl. These people have never been racist towards me. I've been coming to their store for a decade. She's been the sweetest person. She's come to my shows. She's come to my wife's shows. Nothing but nice. I just think that she's hurt and she's upset. That's what I think. But if I distance myself or disconnect myself from her, then what I'm doing is burning the bridge of what could possibly be the only person who's looking at her without a certain amount of hate or anger, because that's what she's getting right now. It's either love from the super Trumps or hate from everyone else. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, well, where's the middle person? Where's the person saying, look, I get it. Like, you're feeling a certain type of way, but let me tell you how the other side may see it, and maybe you'll understand. And if you don't, you don't. Mm-hmm. And if you kick me out of your store, okay. And if you don't want to sell hats to me, fine. But it, our relationship will not break or sever because you disagree with me, you know? And I know people can say, okay, but what about, you know, what about if it is something as bad as they're racist or they don't like color folk? Well, first of all, then they wouldn't have me on their page if they didn't like color folk. You know what I'm saying? Or people of color, excuse me. And so obviously she's never been racist to me, but if she was all of a sudden a racist, I think about that movie that I watched where that preacher took in, I don't know if you've seen that movie.
It's the former KKK member.
Yeah, he took in a former not even former. He was a KKK member who just at that point was just trying to figure out what he was doing. But the preacher showed him so much love that he denounced the KKK, and then they went around speaking about their story together. Mm. If that preacher was in today's society, he would have been canceled.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If he let a KKK member live in his house. Mm-hmm. But what ended up happening? Not only did that guy convert, but they ended up traveling together, telling their story, helping other racist people. But that movement would have been stopped because of cancel culture. And if he would have listened to other people instead of listening to God.
I have another part that I wanted to read from the book. So this, he says, this is Pharisees. Their name means set apart. And their main distinctive was a belief in the oral law that God gave to Moses along with the Torah or written law. For the Jewish people, the Torah is similar to a nation's constitution in the sense that it sets down a series of laws that are open to clarification and interpretation. Pharisees believed that God also gave Moses the knowledge of what these laws meant and how they should be applied. And even more than that, these set-apart men believed that they were the only ones capable of understanding and sharing the law. Imagine their frustration when the carpenter's son interpreted the law differently than they did. That speaks to me because it kind of reminds me of like what we're doing on this podcast and what we're doing in deconstructing and what me personally, what I am doing in with what I have been taught. Being bold enough to say, I think I interpret this differently. And that's what Jesus did. He interpreted differently than what the Pharisees did. And so if anything, as I'm deconstructing away from a lot of the things I've been taught in the church, I feel like I'm actually becoming more like Jesus and more like love. So I really appreciate this book, Drop the Stones, Carlos Rodriguez. That's just a couple of the parts that I've highlighted. And I'm only in the first, like, chapter 6. That's it.
Yeah.
So it's a really good book. I would suggest everybody go get it.
I love it. I love it. Thank you, Queen, for what you're reading. I appreciate that. And now we'll move on to the episode. Today we're going to talk about what we took from 2020. What we're grateful for. What were our highs and lows. That was the three things, right, Queen? What we're grateful for, what are our highs and lows, what we take away from 2020 in that year, what we learned from it, what we appreciated about it. Obviously, you guys are probably all thinking the same thing. And then what are we looking forward to for in 2021, which we're currently in, and it started off, pretty shitty.
My mom sent me a screenshot of a meme because I'm not on social media right now. And it said, I would like to cancel my subscription to 2021. I've tried the free 7-day trial and I'm not interested.
2021's already starting off crazy. Just when you think that it can't get even worse, it gets worse while other parts, look, I don't understand this about, I really do think there's two different kind of Americas that people live in. Because we see what's happening in the news. We see the absolute amount of divide. And then you see this other side of things. Like, you know, we're in the process of buying a new house. And all the realtors are saying, it's crazy. The market's crazy. People are buying houses everywhere. It's amazing. It's going, like, there's very two real things, you know. Realtors are probably ecstatic. Like, they're just, life is just doing well, and people out buying houses, and the house we sold to our, to these people, they're putting in a fireplace and extending the damn, you know, wine cellar, and it's a very nice life. And then you got a very different life that other people are living. And I don't know if it's that it was never, like, I feel like it was always this way. I just never paid attention to it as much as I do now.
Like, how, so do you mean always this way?
Like, there's always been the haves and the have-nots, yeah, or the good and the bad.
Yeah, the gap.
But it's just never been so prominent than now. It's just never been, like, when they, so when the Capitol happened, people are like, everyone, white and black alike, on social media was like, if these were black people, they would have been shot.
Absolutely.
And no one.
100.
I don't know anyone. I, you know, even under these things, I'm just like, man, is this the first time that a whole lot of white people are actually now ashamed? The Republicans are all bailing. They're bailing. They're dropping out of positions.
It's split. Well, there's a split happening, because you got some who are kind of like, okay, I realize that I've sold myself.
Yeah.
And I realize that now, I mean, unfortunately, a lot of people, I felt like, again, not I'm not here to bash on the Republican Party.
Sure.
I think it's more what Donald Trump represents. And I think a lot of people are starting to realize, like, oh, this was a sinking ship.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people have been talking about that for a long time. So I feel like that gap of people being able to see and people being able to ignore, that gap has shrunk.
Right.
But the gap of people actually having and not having, that gap felt like it just got bigger.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. Right. That gap, that was the gap that widened. When we look at last year, how much more, I think it was just over $1 trillion that in combined wealth that billionaires had accumulated during this pandemic.
Wow.
And then when you look at how many people are unemployed, you look at how many people who, again, are late on rent payments.
Lost their businesses.
Like, how many people have lost family members due to COVID? Like, that gap is, and it's weird because it's like one of those things where you always wonder when it comes to things and you realizing it, it's always this moment of either A, how long have I been denying that this thing has actually been taking place? Like, how come I just came to awareness now? Or is this actually something that's actually like a new discovery? Like, this is something that's actually happening before my eyes.
Mm.
So, yeah, I don't even know where I was going with that, but.
No, it's just what I was talking about of how in our face it is that there are very much two different Americas. And I think if we're going to take away anything from 2020, at least me, let me speak for me, I'm taking away the fact that that Capitol thing was, I'm struggling. I know you said that are the Republican Party like really jumping ship? I think the only ones that aren't jumping ship there are the ones that are looking to the next 4 years and realizing, oh, we got to save face as much as we can. But behind closed doors, there's none of us like, yes, we're so happy about this guy and what happened. I think you'd be on a really lonely island, because there's, you know, I was watching the speeches afterwards, and they were saying it was the first time that both left and right actually stood up and clapped. At the same time, when Pence talked, like, Pence gave a speech and both sides stood up and clapped. I've never seen that happen where both sides clapped. It's usually just, you know, the whoever side's talking will clap. The other side stays real still because it's all about politics at that point. But after they got people, you know, doing what they did, it was like, for once, that room was unified. So I don't know, man. It's very apparent now more than ever. And what I'm hoping for in 2021 is somehow, it's so dumb to, I don't want to say dumb, but it's so, me saying a unified country feels so, I don't know, Hallmarky. But
Miss
I
America.
I really would like it.
World peace.
You know, I really, really would like it. I would hate I would hate to see more things like the Capitol building rush happen. Like, I don't know how much more, you know, and it's funny because I put it on my Instagram, but I said, how in the hell did, you know, Olympus have Fallen happen in real life? And then so many people responded to me like, I was thinking the same thing. And I read one girl's thing. She was like, I was just talking to my husband, like, you know, I was always afraid of another country doing this to us. But I never thought I'd see our country. And she's like, my husband doesn't cry. And we were driving home. And it was like the first time that he cried.
Whoa.
He doesn't cry. But we were talking about it. And we were just like.
That's the scary part, is thinking about these other countries looking at us just weakening and weakening, just like dividing each other. Like, just. That's the scary part, is to think.
Because you can take advantage of it.
Yes, absolutely.
The states of America are not united.
Mm-hmm.
It's not. Like, we're not living up to our name.
Yeah, and then I think it's the reality setting in for a lot of people, seeing what happened there on the 6th, was that the greatest threat to our democracy is truly us.
Mm-hmm.
And just the truth of that is, like, heavy. Like, those protests, that's like... It's different because I had a couple of people message me and they're like, well, what's the difference between this and Black Lives Matter protests? Like, nothing happened. There's no consequences. And I said, like, well, one of these was like very emphatically fighting for like justice. One of these other ones was a threat to our democracy. Like, whoa. Like, this is like, and again, it's probably framed completely different on the other side. But through my lens of how I view this is like, these are so-called patriots who are attacking one of the most sacred buildings in our entire country, attacking our democracy. And just let that sit in for a moment. That's like, that's really sad. My heart was so heavy. I like literally had to like, I remember I was just sitting down on the couch watching the news and I was just like, oh God, you gotta help us, God, help us, you know, praying. And
it's weird because when you think about the other side though, what makes it justifiable is, it's probably the same thing they thought before we, you know, had the fight with Britain, you know? Like, there's people that are trying to run America and take our liberties.
Yeah.
And that's literally what they think. They think this is a legitimate takeover that it's not warranted. So to be like, what are they thinking? It's like, no, these fools are thinking that they're setting the country free, that this is noble. It's the same thing. It's literally history repeating. It's the same thing when you talk about the Crusades.
You're absolutely.
Like, really, you're out there killing people for Jesus?
We're not
killing people for Jesus. We're killing people who are opposed and trying to take away Jesus. There's a man has done well throughout history to justify their immorality. And you can't, reason does not belong in the conversation because... They have all the reason in the world. They have concocted, and you're on this side saying I can't believe them, and they're on that side saying I can't believe them.
Yeah, the left is gonna destroy. Yeah.
And, you would think at some point you'd come to the idea of like somebody has to like wake up and be like the other side's right. You know, like at some point you're gonna get there and realize we're right, but it never happens. It never happens until it's stopped with like an utter like. Something bad that happened.
Because it never even stopped after the Civil War.
No.
Like, so it's like, it doesn't matter what happens. Like, and this is the other thing too that hit me of this moment was like, is what we're seeing, a couple things, is what we're seeing like, sort of like the death of a cult? Or is this an exorcism of our nation?
Mm.
Or is this the birthing pangs of a new movement that has now been empowered to do what they're due? And Trump getting out of office doesn't mark the end of this movement.
No.
In fact, it now has given legitimacy to the movement.
Right.
And this is the birthing pang of what we're going to experience for the decades to come.
And that's sad and scary to think about. And
we talked about that the other night.
I feel like, to touch on a second ago, we were saying, like, what's the difference with Black Lives Matter movement and what you saw all summer long? You didn't have the leader of the free world saying, go out into the streets in these buildings and tell them how angry you are.
Yeah.
Like, that's a very big difference. But what you were just saying about the birth pangs of a new movement, my friend was telling me the other day that Hitler took over the country with only 33% of support. Just 33% of support.
And was this was before he was in power?
No, he was in power.
Okay.
But only had 33% support of the country.
Oh, like the approval rating?
Okay. Approval rating, yes. Yeah. And only 33% approval rating.
Interesting.
And was able to do everything that he did. And currently, 39% of Americans believe that the election was stolen. That is scary. And that is powerful.
Yeah.
That is...
What I was telling Anne is the big difference between that and now is that Hitler had an army. That's the biggest difference. So you can push through what you decide if you're the most powerful guy on the playground.
Yeah, you got the...
Once Trump is gone...
Got the nuclear codes.
There is no army.
Yeah, it's...
There is no... You can rise up.
You got the Dynasty Army. Don't...
You can...
Don't...
No, you can rebel, but once... Once what's his face? Biden is in charge. Like, he has access to the most powerful army in the world. You at this point, America, it would be futile to try to rebel. We're not the same country anymore. It's not the North against the South. It's not. It's we have created this global powerhouse that can literally squash anything, even our own selves, if we act up. Which is even more scary.
It will be scary though if there's someone who carries the same sort of intent that, you know, Trump embodied and is a little bit more put together and a little bit more family friendly and a little bit more quote Christian.
Uh-huh.
That's where it starts getting scary.
Where they don't have to make excuses for his actions and his words. Because, we've been hearing every excuse in the book from every Christian, every pastor, every church, every excuse for his actions and his words. But if you put somebody in place that you don't have to make excuses for them, they just so sly under the radar. Oh, my God.
Do you think we'll ever see somebody like that, though?
Absolutely. I don't know. And I'm not going to argue because Jesus is coming back soon. I think every generation believes that, you know, of like, hey, it's the end of the world. We're living in it. I mean, the New Testament writers, they felt that way too. And they would lead you to believe that in your generation it would happen. Mm-hmm. But I think he exposed so much. Trump did.
Mm-hmm. Are we? But this is a question. I've heard this argument before because I always tell people, I appreciate people coming out their neck because, in this war for morality, for the country, for
truth,
like I'd rather know who I'm fighting than wonder which one of these fools really thinks that I'm just a black boy. Mm-hmm. I'd rather know. Tell me straight up. Like, I'm not mad that all of a sudden you got gusto because the leader is now bringing it out of you. Good. Good. Like, to me, good, because I want to know who y'all are. Mm-hmm. I want to know who I need to worry about, who I need to, you know, be aware of, how I need to move when I'm around you. You know, I'd rather have that than how many closet people who still felt the same way.
Yeah.
They just talked about it in country clubs or in backyards or in, you know what I'm saying? And we didn't know nothing about it. At some point, these people felt empowered to be who they really were. Mm-hmm. And now we know. And more people than ever are even saying this. Another guy that I was listening to or read, it was like, there's a lot of people that are friends of mine that I didn't know they thought this way. But all these situations that have happened now, when I hear them talk and when I see what they're posting, when I see what they really think, my friend circle has gotten so much smaller because I'm like, holy crap, me and this guy do not think the same at all. And so I think what a lot of people are taking from 2020 is their circle wasn't as tight as they thought it was.
Well, if we're doing like what I'm grateful for of 2020, but in the political type space, I am grateful that Donald Trump stirred up what he stirred up in Christianity and shined a light on certain things in Christianity and Christians, because that really was my trigger to my deconstruction. Mm-hmm. I had always had questions that I was okay with no answers or not feeling right about answers, but it's just faith and it's just, this is the way it is. I'd rather be safe than sorry. I don't want to go to hell, so let me just be safe than sorry. But once Donald Trump got into office and I saw Christians and their support of him and making excuses for him really mm-hmm. encouraged my deconstruction, because I was like, oh, I am not that.
Yeah.
And I think it's time that I actually figure out, then what am I?
Mm-hmm.
So, and I'm still on that journey, but I at least, if he wasn't in office doing what he was doing and stirring up, like you said, like allowing people to be emboldened to be who they really are and kind of shine a light on what I was subscribing to, mm-hmm. I may not have started my process or as like ripped a Band-Aid. I don't think I ever really ripped a Band-Aid off. I kind of slowly was like unraveling the stitching of the Band-Aid. But yeah, so I'm grateful that he put that flashlight on Christianity, because that really encouraged me to like start asking some deep questions of what I really believe.
You know what's funny, that when you think about it, just as you were answering that, when that statement is said, the freedom fighters that always fight no matter what, like we have friends that are super political and super about the fight, and I admire them so much, because it doesn't matter who's in office, they're constantly fighting for what's right.
Mm-hmm.
I can see how those people cannot see this point of view. I think this point of view of what we're saying, that we're happy that he exposed certain things, I think in a honest way, for those of us who probably didn't give two shits about politics or right and wrong when our country, we just kind of lived our own lives. We just kind of went about our day. And as long as it wasn't affecting us, we're straight. But 2020 just did this thing on us where it's like, 2020 was throwing it in our face so much that it was like, you are forced to care.
Mm-hmm.
And for those of us who didn't, I can be honest, like I knew some stuff, but I don't know if I was as engaged or even emotionally available to politics or what it meant.
Yeah.
And now it's like, I can't run away from it. It's like, I have to feel something.
Even social justice.
I may not know what to do about it. I may not be able to do anything about it, or maybe I can, you know? But these questions even that I'm asking myself, like, should I cancel people? Can they have an opposing view so bad that it makes me abort my Christianity and say, nah, you're too far gone. I don't want to talk to you, or I can't mess with you. All these questions that never were in my view at all. And now I'm asking these really deep questions of myself and even of other believers. It's like, yo, how far is too far? You know, did we really care before? And now that we do care, you know, the idea of inclusivity, you know, which I want to do a podcast about inclusivity. Like, what does it really mean to be inclusive? Because when I hear the term, it still feels like what you're saying is we want to include people who think the way we think.
Mm.
It's not really all encompassing, because when I hear inclusivity, that means everyone's included. So that means if we got in a room, we would have racists over there. We would have Trumps over here. We would have non-Trumps over here. We would have gay. We would have lesbian. We would have every single thing. Christian, everybody's included. Everybody speak your piece. We're going to respect one another, but we're going to hear everybody out. To me, that's what a inclusive world looks like, where we have someone from every represented, even the most disgusting and just vile person, I'm willing to let you speak so that I can try to understand why it is that you do what you do. But are we really like ready for that?
I don't know, man.
To be truly inclusive.
Yeah, it means, I won't answer that, but I do want to circle back to something you were just talking about earlier of how, and then I think Angie even talked about it too, of how 2020, and even some years before, but we're focusing on 2020, how it kind of pulled us out of our space to kind of start caring about things that maybe A, we didn't care about, B, we were unaware of, or C, that we finally found out that we weren't the only people that cared about those things.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And so it's interesting because there's a couple things I want to note about that is one, like there's always kind of three evolutions of someone's life, right? So the first bubble that you're kind of born into is always your story. It's my story, right? It's this very individualistic thing. And we see this specifically in Western Christianity. It is salvation is such an individual thing. When we know, when we look at the early church, salvation wasn't just a personal individual thing. It was a collective thing. It was a community because it's too much for one person to bear the holiness of God. Like it's always one of those things. It's a collective thing. Like mm-hmm. it's not just I am holy. It's we are holy. And we share that burden together, right? So it's like my story. And then the thing that you're pulled into is our story. Right. So it's not just like what's happening in my life. It's now what's happening in our country. Like there are mm-hmm. other black and brown people who are feeling the exact same way that I am. There are white people who are now becoming allies and like seeing what they're experiencing. And all of a sudden you are pulled out of my story into our story. Ultimately, like the trajectory, the arc of scripture is to pull you in the story. Mm. Right. So it's my story, our story, the story. Where it encompasses all these things. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that's sort of the invitation of like stepping into this new year of like, we've all been pulled now into this collective story that we're part of, but what is the bigger story beyond that? Mm-hmm. And for 2020, I think I would agree. Like for me, I'm super thankful that like a lot of truth came out on a broad scale. But for me, it was even on a personal scale, man. I had some like, life-changing moments in 2020.
Yeah.
And one of them happened to be like in the last moments of 2020 on New Year's mm-hmm. Eve. Mm-hmm. And it was like a super traumatic experience and I won't get into all the details really, but like I almost died choking to death. And luckily my friend was there to give me the Heimlich. But earlier that night I had taken an edible and I'd had a really bad trip off of it and I've never experienced that before, right? I've smoked some weed before and usually it just kind of takes the edge off, you know? And so I'd had an edible and I'd start going on a bad trip. And the beautiful thing about this, and again, I'm in no way saying, oh, you should go out and smoke weed. You should go. And I'm neither condoning it either as well. I think you are your own person. You're responsible for what you can do that right. and how maturely you can handle that or whatever.
Right.
But the interesting thing about that is a lot of us, if we're being really honest with ourselves, we have walls up that we personally don't have the will to let down. So sometimes that's powerful while some things can be served as tools mm. to help you take those walls down and really get to a deep place. And so, so anyways, I'm on this bad trip and my walls are completely down. Like, I mean, completely. Like, if you'd asked me anything, I would have told you the God honest truth in the bottom of my heart. And like, that is so scary. That is such a scary place to be in. And I'm actually not sorry. I was about to apologize if you're offended that I took an edible. I'm not going to apologize, okay? And this is like the first time publicly I've ever even said something like this. So this is a little bit of a heavy moment for me. But,
totally.
All my walls are down. And all of a sudden, I realize a really, really deep truth about myself that deep down inside my body, I've held for years. And I don't think I ever had the vulnerability enough to truly admit that and let it out. Mm. And I realize, like, as a three, obviously, I'm an achiever. I never feel like I'm enough. I've always struggled with that. I always feel like I have to prove myself time and time again, even mm-hmm. to the people that I love the most. I feel like, and it's one thing to like try and put your best foot forward, but it's a whole nother thing when you feel like you have to prove yourself just so you can deem yourself worthy to receive love from that person. I do it in my friendships. I do it in my marriage. I do it in my social media image. I do all these things. I try so hard because deep down inside, I don't really feel like I'm worthy of love. And I'm getting emotional right now because like I realized in that moment on December 31st, 2020, that deep down inside, I just don't actually believe that God loves me. Hmm. And that was really tough. And I realized like I'm sitting there. I'm literally in my underwear on my bed. I'm a weeping mess. I'm surrounded by a few of my friends. And it was seriously the most vulnerable moment of my life. One, we're in my room, which is like a sacred space for Maddie and I. Usually when guests come over, we're in the guest room or living room for the most part. Two, I'm in my underwear. Like, I'm the only one in the room without a shirt on or pants on. Three, we're on my bed. Like, this is like a sacred space. Like, you don't just have guests hanging out on your own bed unless you got, like, you know, different kind of setup or whatever. And I'm realizing, oh my God, all these years, I have almost dedicated myself to Christianity and trying so hard and praying and fasting and taking a Nazarite vow and going to all these revival services and constantly trying to believe, all to feel like at some point I will win the love of God. And my striving was the striving it was, because deep down inside, I just actually don't believe that God loves me. Wow. I feel like I am so unworthy. I feel like I am so unclean, and I never feel like I'm good enough. And I never realized that about myself. That is a deep, honest truth that, like, it was even scary for me to admit. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm thinking, man, I'm literally on staff at a church. I am paid to go travel and speak places about God. I have been like a poster boy for sort of that movement in a lot of ways early on. And all these years, I actually really didn't believe that God loves me. And when you believe that, it bleeds over into every area of your life.
Yeah.
And like, I realized, oh my gosh, I've been faking it all this long. And I just kept weeping and weeping. Wow. Like, it was like years of holding this, just like crying on my bed. And like, even deep down thinking like these questions about the afterlife of like, you know, there's a lot of ways in my belief now that I don't really believe in hell. Mm-hmm. But like, not feeling like I am worthy enough to receive the love of God, there's also this belief of like, man, I sure hope heaven accepts me. And man, I just like, I was sitting there and I still feel it. Like, I'm hopeful because I got it out. Like, the truth is out. And I was like, oh my God, I didn't even know I believed that, you know? But man, it was like, it was the deepest truth that has ever been revealed in me. And it wasn't just in a moment by myself. It was a moment amongst people who truly accept that and accept me. Mm-hmm. And that was like, it was such a beautiful moment. And I remember one of my friends, he said, he's like, you know what, Brandon? This space amongst these people who really love you, this is heaven right now. Mm-hmm. And heaven accepts you. Mm-hmm. And I just started weeping again and was just like, oh my God. And after it, like the next couple of days, I couldn't help but shake my head and just think, wow, like, who would have thought, like, this is how 2020 would end for me. Like, a painful trip, but at the same time too, like, the deepest truth of me being revealed. Wow. And I was like, wow, like, this felt like such a low, but this also feels like such a win. Mm-hmm. Because, like, that's the thing about truth, right? Like, you can only get to the truth when you're at the bottom. Mm-hmm. Like, I wish you could like get truth at the mountaintop. Like, I really wish, like, in these like moments where you're like, yo, everything's going great. Oh yeah. Like, dude, God loves me. But it's not till like you're at the bottom where you could truly be honest with yourself and where you're at. And like, to me, that was like one of the things that I took away from 2020. And I'll read you quick something.
Like, you don't learn a lesson in a yes. You learn a lesson in a no. You don't learn a lesson when you're winning. You learn a lesson when you lose.
Yeah. And we, at my church, we had this like grief specialist come in last year. And this was like early in the year, pre-pandemic. And she kind of did like a crash course with more materials and stuff to be added, but kind of like how to deal with grief. Mm. And one of the things she said, which was super helpful for me because there was a lot of grieving last year, was the biggest thing that I took, it's to tell the truth about ourselves all the time. Wherever we are and however we are, that's where we are. And we have to be honest in that space. And I felt like that trip for me was, that was me telling the truth about myself. And sometimes the truth that we tell about ourselves is not something that we want to hear. and it hurts so bad, right? Before the truth sets you free, it makes you miserable. Oof. And that was the truth that I needed to tell. And so I'm heading into 2021. I actually feel like with momentum. Most people would feel like, damn, bro, that's like a really sucky way to go. But I actually feel like, I actually feel clean. Like that truth, like there's nothing, no matter how hard I try, I can't hide. Like I can't hide. And so, yeah, that was the thing I'm most grateful for in 2020.
Mm. Well, Brandon, I just want to say, thank you for your honesty. I'm so proud of you for being so vulnerable and honest, because I know that is a big step for you. I don't want to say risk, because it doesn't hold the same weight as it did for 5 years ago, Brandon, or 10 years ago, Brandon, or high school, Brandon. High school, Brandon, that's a huge risk that you just took to be so honest right now. But I feel like, to me, it just shows your growth, your bravery, your humility, your honesty, your openness to God, the creator of the universe. And so thank you for being so honest and vulnerable with us here right now, and with everybody who's listening, who may approve, who may not approve, and their approval means nothing in your life story. And I'm so grateful for you right now. So thank you for sharing that.
Thank you,
man.
I said mine, right, babe? Yeah, I did say mine. I started out the whole conversation. Do you have something specific?
Yeah. So, when I said earlier about deconstructing, that was more because the conversation started politically. So I was like, well, if we're talking politically, then yes, Donald Trump helped me to realize I am not who I thought I was as a Christian. 2020 taught me lots of lessons. Before the pandemic, I was already on a break. I had already decided to take a sabbatical and to pull back from work mode and to deconstruct my machine, not just religion and my faith and my beliefs, but deconstruct the machine that I have built that has gotten me to where I am in my career. So what I learned in 2020 is how powerful rest is, one, and how easy it is to not be balanced in everything. And people would ask me, how do you balance work life and you know, married life and family life? Like, you do it so well because you're always like with your family, you're always working, you're always whatever, like how do you balance it all? And I'd be like, I don't know, I just do. And then I turns out I don't balance. I am not balanced. I am depleted. I am empty. I'm running on fumes. I am not giving my 100 to my marriage or to my career because I don't have 100 to give. So I learned that even in that, finding out balance, it's hard to keep balance. For instance, as I'm deconstructing from this striving, from this work life, from this, you know, produce more content, like be relevant, be number one, sell tickets, like this machine. And I'm like detoxing from this like hustle mentality. In that process, I ended up demonizing hustle mentality. And then I had this moment where I was in my backyard meditating and I look at my house and how beautiful it is. And I'm like, but hustle's what got me here. So as I was like, trying to find the balance of, you know, I'm hustling too hard and I'm working too hard, you need to come to the middle. I bypassed the middle and went straight to the other side that was like, hustle is the enemy, nobody hustle. And then I was like, actually, let's bring it back, balance even in that. And so I feel like one of the lessons that I learned is that it's really hard to balance life, and there's grace in it. And if anything, it helps me to not judge, because I am constantly in a place of thinking I know what's up and I don't, thinking I know what's right for me and I don't, thinking I'm balanced and I'm actually, it's a facade and I'm running on fumes. So I feel like 2020, I learned that I love to rest, and if I could be a stay-at-home dog mom, I probably would. I probably would be a stay-at-home dog mom who just has like a real funny Instagram or something. Because like, and I'm not even that funny on Instagram, but I feel like if it wasn't my job, I would be real like super funny and real good at it. Uh-huh. Because that's what happens is when you make your gift your job, it starts depleting you and taking the joy out of it and stuff. Mm. And so as I'm jumping back into work mode for 2021, I'm realizing like I'm reminding myself that I'm good at certain things.
Yeah.
And that I am funny and that I am talented, but I was like demonizing all of that all year. And I'm like, no, that's what makes you tired. Don't try to write sketches to get views. Like, no, like write a sketch cause you're good at it.
Mm.
And you're funny and people like to laugh at what you have to say.
Yeah.
So I don't know. That's,
it's funny because I listen to you and I'm like, it's the, I think the beauty of marriage is you get the privilege of witnessing somebody else's life. There's a movie, man, I wish I could pull up the clip, with J-Lo and Richard Gere.
Oh my God, are you calling me J-Lo? Thank you so much.
it's Dance With Me. I think it's called Dance With Me. And so Richard Gere is, he's going through a crisis with, not, I don't want to say crisis, but with his wife, who is Susan Sarandon. And Shall We Dance? Excuse me. It's called, okay, Shall We Dance? And he's going through a crisis because he's trying to figure out, like, I don't know if it's his purpose or what's his passion. And so he stumbles onto this dance class because he sees J-Lo dancing from his subway and whatever. So he goes, he starts taking class, and then you meet all these characters. And so there's this line that Susan Sarandon, when she's having dinner with the private investigator that she hired, and she asks him, you know, like, why do you think people get married? And he says, I think people get married because they want to make sure that somebody witnesses their life, that their life doesn't go on and is forgotten. Because if you think about it, the people that love us most, like our parents or whatever, technically they're supposed to go before us. And then if it's just us and we don't have that other person that's been there since the beginning or for a long time, you know, like, who's going to bear witness to your life? Who's going to talk about you when you're gone? Who's going to really whatever? So I remember that was a line that always stuck with me. It's like, you want someone to bear witness to your highs, to your lows, to your wins, to your losses. And I always love that I get to bear witness, because I always feel like I'm a husband, but I'm also a fan in your life. And I always get the privilege of getting to see you learn and grow and go through your processes. And I used to speak into them a lot more. Now I try to stay out of it as much as I can, because I'm like, let me just, she's going to learn how she's going to learn, and it's going to be when she needs to learn it, and it's going to be in her own way, and it's not going to be the way I want it. But I like being able to witness your learning.
I think it's
fun. As a husband, I enjoy it. All that to say that
I've definitely learned a lot more this year, but this whole podcast would just be about all the lessons that I've learned about surrendering my comfort and letting go. And I mean, my chakras, like, I don't know. I have so many things that I've learned in 2020 that I'm very grateful for, that I am taking with me into 2021.
One of the other things too, that 2020 like forced me to learn, was learning how to take rest in the midst of the hustle. So like, for me, one thing I started doing in 2020 was actually observing a Sabbath. So working on Sunday to me isn't a Sabbath, because I'm like responsible when we were meeting in person, you know, we're responsible for things in service and all that. But Saturdays have become my actual Sabbath. And it was funny because I was so opposed to it, because I thought, yo, here's just some more hours where I could hustle and I could actually get some bread, you know, and all that. But then the Sabbath to me is one, a day to just rest my body, rest my soul. But then two, it is that day that is completely blank to constantly remind me that Brandon, the work will always feel like it's unfinished. There aren't enough hours, there aren't enough days for you to finish the work truly. So the Sabbath is that constant reminder the work remains unfinished.
Yeah. Yeah.
And to be okay with that. So to me, it's like, man, it has brought so much, I feel like, benefit to my soul, my body. Like I was just telling Ange before this, like on Saturdays, I sleep so much better. Like going into like Friday night to Saturday morning, I sleep in knowing I don't have anything that I have on schedule tomorrow. Mm-hmm. And just that knowing, it like, it takes a level of that stress. Now, again, some of that stress is healthy stress because I got to go out and I got to do stuff and provide for my family and build for our future, whatever. But man, I sleep so good on Friday nights.
That's the one thing I took from my last.
And then Manny woke you up. Sorry about that.
I had to. It was freaking 10 something.
He was, dude. What's crazy is if he didn't wake
his Sabbath.
If Manny didn't wake me up, I'd have probably been asleep. Not even exaggerated for like a whole nother hour,
which would have been 11:30, which we were supposed to be here. I'm like, I gotta call this fool. That's the one thing I took away from my last situation, my panda situation with I was about to say my boy Josh, but Josh, because he don't talk to me no more. But he made me observe a Sabbath because, you know, he was into super hardcore. And at first I was like, this is dumb. And then when I started observing it, I really like that day of doing nothing. It really replenished me. Because I remember one time we were in the studio and he observed the Sabbath the day before. I did not. I kept working. And the next day he came in, he was mad, just like ready to work. And I was mad, like, ugh, tired. I don't want to do anything, you know? And he's just looking at me, just laughing, like, you didn't observe Sabbath yesterday, did you? And I was like, no. And he's just like, and it hit me. And it wasn't the legalism of it. It was just like, bruh, rest is important. You know, the Sabbath wasn't created for God. It was created for man.
Mm-hmm. Like, you're not going to hell if you don't observe it. It's just beneficial to right.
in a
your
very,
life.
In a very long term. Practical way, God knew that we as people, like Brandon is saying, the hustle is constant. You always feel the need to do something. And just being able to just do nothing, it's a beautiful thing. So if you don't do a Sabbath, I would encourage you,
we pick should a do day. That. We haven't. Purposely done. We're not doing that this weekend, at least.
What do you mean?
We're working today, and
I mean, it's kind of work, but not really.
Yeah, because
it is, but it isn't. Like I was sitting right here having a good old conversation, and then you're like, "You guys, I'm waiting for you to take pictures." That's a schedule. We had a schedule to go take pictures out front. That's
that one saying. Thing.
This, I'm just saying. This yeah, is work. Like,
it's and, doing what you want. It's not really. I don't see it as work, but I get it.
Yeah,
it's something on the schedule.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah.
But you can pick any day to be your Sabbath.
I know. Yeah. So it's just like the thing that we love to do is we love to have, which obviously right now it's different. It'll be different this year. So maybe you're listening to this later and a lot of us have, you know, received the vaccine or whatever. But like Saturday is usually a day where we either like have a good meal with our friends or we just like we go off on a drive in somewhere, you mm-hmm. know, and we just hang out and there's nothing really like it's kind of whatever this day brings.
You know what? That brings me to where I want to, what I want for 2021. And I ironically said this for 2019.
We're going to start a cult?
Yo!
I want to do things, and I'm starting it with my drive to Nashville. But I want to do things that I see other people do that's within my realm of doing. And I don't want to do it because they're doing it. I want to do it because it's something that I really think would be fun, but I don't do it because of my routine.
I got lost. Can you say it again?
Okay, so
I
like
an example.
I yeah. always say I love four-wheeling. Uh-huh. And remember last year, me and your yeah. brother, we rented a, not last year, the year before, we rented a Mercedes RV, really nice, plush, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And we went driving to Zion, and then we went to Sedona, and then we did this whole trip. We RV'd in the freaking desert, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, we went hiking in Angeles, or it was some Angels, whatever.
Angeles Crest, yeah.
No, Angeles Crest is out here, but we did all these things of stuff that I see people doing that I'm like, oh, that'd be dope. You know, just hike these mountains or go four-wheeling. Like stuff you see in movies or on TV shows mm-hmm. that you fully can do. All you got to do is carve out time. You can fully do it, but you don't because you're in this routine, of like, this is what I do on the weekend. This is what I do here. As opposed to like really starting an adventure.
Yeah. God, it's hard.
You know, like I was telling Pensiver, I was like, I want to just go out and camp. Like just either rent an RV or just get in the car, drive to like, I keep saving places in my phone from other people on Instagram that they're like, woke up to this view. And I'm like, that's
I want to wake up to that view.
I know. That's like 4 hours away. We have the gas in our car. We have the car. Let's just get in the car and go. We can literally do it on any day of the week, but we don't. We just settle into the same. Yeah. And I don't want to settle into the same no more. So because of that, that's why I'm like, I'm driving to Nashville next. Bought a car for Nashville. I'm going to get in it. I think my boy Mike is coming.
We're going on a road trip. Let me buy a car for this road trip.
Yeah. No, we need it for Nashville. So we're going to get in the car and inspiration is going to be our destination. Ooh, that'll preach. Inspiration is your destination. Shandara. Shandara.
We need some chords right now. Like, yeah, take us to church.
Yeah. Urban church.
Inspiration. Urban church.
Anytime the pastor says something. Inspiration will be our destination. We are only making stops based on where we're at that inspires us. And if there's inspiration there, we're going to post up. I'm going to work on music. He's going to meet the people of the whatever. We're going to try to vlog it all. And literally, however long it takes us to get to Nashville will be however long it takes us to get. No schedule. If we want to stay longer in a place, we're going to stay. If we don't, we're going to go. It's literally no kind of schedule. So I'm so excited and a little bit afraid because I don't know what that looks like. I've never done that before. But for 2021.
That'll be fun, man.
That's what it's going to be about. I'm going to do more things. But you have to do it with me because you're kind of my wife.
Yeah, I am kind of.
All right. Thank you guys for listening, man. We appreciate you guys. We've been going for 106. All right. That's I'm with it.
106 and Park.
106 Let's and Park. We appreciate you guys so much, man. Shout out to all the Patreon members. We love you guys so much. Thank you for supporting us. If you want to support this podcast because it helps you, feeds you in any type of way, makes you feel like you're a part of the family, you just go to patreon.com/NATRT, or we have the links and all the descriptions, and you guys can join. Little as $2 to $12 to $25. There's even a new $99 option, which I just wanted to let you go, which is a one-on-one with me, 30 minutes every month. We can increase it to whatever you guys want, but it's going to be one-on-one, solely focused on getting you to where you need to be if you think any of this crap we say on here is good. If you don't, I put it in the description. You can quit at any time. I will not be offended. But check out our Patreon because it really does mean a lot, and we love everybody who's supporting us now. So grateful for you. We're going to enjoy our Saturday and make it the rest of it a Sabbath.
But until then, we pray that you find a seat at the table.
Yes,
but if you don't, you're always welcome to Mars.
Welcome to Mars.
Welcome. What is
welcome, welcome to Mars?
Welcome to Mars. Elon Musk, Tesla, SpaceX.
Oh, this is a good $75 bottle of wine.